Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, and I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith. I'm glad to be here along with my great audio engineer for another show, and podcast. We are a radio show on Red State Talk Radio, great radio station. We're actually on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, and both channels. So, what does that mean? Two for two? 6 and 7 p.m., my audio engineer is reminding me. And we're also a podcast, and our podcast is available on all podcast platforms that we are aware of. Podbean and CastBox are two of them. iTunes is the third one. Also, we have a website, throttleupradio.com, correct? You post it on the website every week, right? And that's actually an archive, so we have... What, do we have all of them that we've ever done? Yes. Okay, so, you know, if you get bored, you can listen to more of it. or if you miss my voice, you can just go in there and get all kinds of stuff. And so we've been doing this for quite some time. Having a great time doing it, by the way. This is fun. And enjoyable for us. Hopefully it's meaningful for our listening audience as well. Okay, what else is there? We have, of course, we have a new book, Throttle Up. No, we have a new book on the other side of things, our sister initiative, and that is the Sonic Warrior Initiative. Oh, we have Substack, right? So we should go to the Sonic Warrior. What is it called? Because a column, right? All right, so we have a weekly column on Substack, and you can get to it all kinds of ways. It's the Sonic Warrior column on Substack, and the last one we wrote was, what was the name of that? It was the Mustang and the Tiger. Yeah, okay. So the first order of business here is we have produced... A short video, and we have posted it on a number of our YouTube channels that we have. I think we have three or four of them. Posted it on the Sonic Warrior, and I think Throttle Up and stuff like that. The purpose of this short clip, it's a note of gratitude. So we recognized. Fairly recently that our audience is growing. All right, so that's basically the idea. We wanted to at least acknowledge that our audience is growing. We are, of course, delighted that it is. We have a Facebook page. We have X, formerly Twitter, is that it? We have an X page, if you will. We have a Substack platform. We have a Sonic Warrior YouTube channel, on and on and on. All right, so the idea here is to recognize all of our friends and subscribers and those who... participate in our content that we produce on a regular basis. Most of it is weekly, but sometimes it's monthly. And finally, we're going to be launching our film documentary here soon. We'll give you the details of that as we go along through the... This will happen probably... sometime this spring. Okay, so let's start off with the note of gratitude, this note of appreciation for all of our listeners, all of our subscribers, and all of our friends that, well, I guess you could say they go out of their way to find out what we are talking about, what we are discussing, what we have written, and things like that. So let's go ahead and play this. How long is this? I think it's about 5 minutes, isn't it? Yeah, it is 5 minutes. So let's play this, and then we'll dive right into the question and the content of the show in just a few minutes. But the first order of business here for us is to express our appreciation for all of you out there that find our content of interest. Here we go.
Greetings. I am Captain Kevin Smith, and I'm here to express my appreciation for all of my Facebook friends and Substack subscribers. I truly appreciate your support, and I am honored to be working with you and providing you with interesting content on a regular basis. Now, of course, I'm the author of the new book, The Sonic Warrior, Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. Now, my book is available as a soft cover, hardcover, ebook, and as an audio book as well. And we're very proud of this book. I think it is a great effort, and I would like to thank my team for the great job that they have done and the great job that they continue to do working with the Sonic Warrior Project. The purpose of what we're doing and what we have planned for the future is to, one, identify that era in aviation. It was a time, quite an extraordinary time in aviation. I would say it was one of the most consequential periods in aviation as well as the course of human events. This is where we first started to operate on a regular basis near, at, or above the speed of sound. Sonic Warrior is a celebration of those events. It also honors all of those great Americans that I worked with during this era, some of the best and the brightest that this country has ever produced. But I would like to point out that each generation is challenged to produce the best in the world. Each era of our military is challenged to produce the best in the world. And let us continue to do that. When we look back on what I was able to do along with my great colleagues, we were able to do things that had never been done before. We were Sonic Warriors. We were the first generation Sonic Warriors. We entered the airborne battle space traveling at ultra high velocities. These velocities often exceeded the speed of sound. And we had to engage the enemy in close-in air combat at these very high velocities. And we were absolutely committed to winning each and every battle. And I worked very hard to make sure that our airborne combat forces were capable of winning each and every battle. In the future, we have a film documentary that is complete, and we're beginning to engage the audience in screening events and presentations. It's the Sonic Warrior film documentary, and that is coming out. It will be hitting the various community theaters around the country. Sometime in the spring or summer of this year, which is 2024. Again, my appreciation for all of you friends and subscribers, a great group of people, and we are honored to be working with you on this important project. Thank you.
Okay, thank you once again. Thank you, all of you out there listening and watching and reading. And now we're going to dive right into our show for this week, which is going to be kicked off by my great audio engineer. She's going to read me this question, and then we will proceed to, is that the right word? Proceed to answer this question to the best of our ability. Here she is.
Hello, Kevin, and hello to your listening audience. We are so glad that everyone is here today. Okay, today's question. Ian McGilchrist, author of The Matter with Things, among others, are discussing the meta crisis. Can you explain for us what is the meta crisis?
Okay, yes, I will. That is something that has emerged out of somewhere, and it now is more or less front and center in the landscape. In our realm of reality, in our perception of reality. And I'm going to be discussing that with respect to how this relates to the tip of the spear. What does it mean in terms of the things that we ought to consider, things that we actually do when we're out there in the operational environment, and we are operating at the tip of the spear, and we are preparing for battle at the high end of the conflict spectrum. Now, all of that stuff is very important, and I think, you know, if I could just jump ahead a little bit, we're going to cover this again, but if I could just jump ahead a little bit, what we're actually talking about is we have missed certain things along the way. We have not paid attention to the things that we should be paying attention to. We have ignored, we have diverted our attention away from those things that are important. And we got involved in trivial discussions. We have done a lot of things that have contributed to where we are now. Now, let me try to explain exactly what a meta crisis is, or what is this meta crisis that we are confronted with at this point in time in our lives and in the life of this great nation of ours. A meta crisis, generally speaking, a meta crisis is that which represents a series of difficulties or problems. The difficulties or problems are confronting us, and they're not going away, and we actually don't have solutions in place. We haven't even conceptualized solutions in many cases. And so the overall problem is getting worse. A meta crisis is a convergence of a number of problems. The problems have converged to a point in which we better do something or things are going to completely fall apart or collapse. We are at the verge of chaos and catastrophe. Now, having said that, I would say that we have entered the realm of chaos. And before, this is in terms of, you know, systems theory, if you will, general systems theory or complexity theory, if you wish to go there, which is a great place to visit as well. But before things completely fall apart, you enter a phase of instability. And this is called, this is an area which we also call chaos. And once you get into this chaotic condition, then it's a small step from there to catastrophe. When catastrophe occurs, then things just completely destroy. Everything is destroyed, or most of everything is rendered non-functional. Okay, so what exactly is occurring? Well, I'm gonna take a look at some of the problems, and then I'm going to take a look at least one effort to address these problems, this formalized or this national effort to address these problems that we are faced with. But let me go through the list here. Now, this is not a complete list. This is just a representative list of things that are occurring in our world, and primarily this has to do with national defense, which is my area of expertise. National defense, the military, certainly. Not just that, though, but things that either are directly or indirectly related to national defense and to military operations, not least of which is the aviation industry. And let me go through this partial list. The first one is the KC-46, which is the new Air Force tanker. There's been extensive production delays, and the vision system that is being employed on this particular new generation tanker system is not working very well, and it has to be completely redesigned. Okay. The second item is the MQ-24, which is a UAV. There's been extensive production delays for that. The third item is the F-35. It's called a TR-3 upgrade. There's been extensive production delays in that. There's been software quality issues and software stability issues. The Boeing 737 MAX, everybody knows about that. There's been some catastrophic failures of the airplane in various ways and modes. There's been serious concern about the quality control that went into the production process, as well as a faulty design of the flight control system. The next item is the V-22 Osprey, which has been grounded for about 3 months, just been released for flight, but it's spent about 3 months. The whole fleet has been grounded because of catastrophic power transmission failure. And the next item is a T-7, new trainer for the Air Force. It's years behind schedule. And the ejection system had to be redesigned because it didn't work properly. Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engines. There's been a production major production defect in that. And it's requiring mandatory removal of the engine, and the engine has to be sent back to the shop. So the problem with that, and this is just how situations compound themselves, how the problems become a compounding problem. The difficulty with that is that the shop visits are up to 300 days to go back into the shop and get repaired. So we're looking at a long repair cycle, and the list goes on. Oh, that's just a sampling of the list that we are faced with. In the last but not least is the supply chain for manufactured products, manufactured systems, and I'm gonna take a look at this is a recent editorial piece in Aviation Week and Space Technology magazine. And in that, the author was talking about the supply chain and the difficulties that we are experiencing in the supply chain, or the component suppliers, the small or medium sized companies that fabricate or manufacture components. It could be metallurgy, it could be electronic, it could be all kinds of things. It could be plastic. It could be you name it. That level or that area of the industrial base is not performing well. It is in disarray. It is it doesn't have the capacity. So we've lost, it appears to me that we have lost a lot of our ability to manufacture these components or these parts that are designed to work in our modern systems. So our manufacturing base has diminished to the point where it is near collapse. Nobody really has an answer for the supply chain problem. The supply chain problem is in fact a meta crisis right now. Okay. And so when you look at all of this stuff, we have supply chain problems, we have manufacturing problems, we have safety problems, we have quality problems, and not least of which is the air transport system that we have set up, not just in this country but across the world. A commercial air transport system is under a great deal of strain. We do not have sufficient air traffic controllers to man it. Our pilots are in short supply. We've had some rather distressing accidents. The Hedina accident is a perfect example of that. Runway accidents. We just had another runway incident at, what was it? At Houston, I think it was. Airplane ran off the runway and into the grass. The list goes on and on and on. And so we have that as well. And so we have this looming meta crisis. And what is exactly what is exactly going on here in terms of, can we clarify the problem? Can we rate, or can we, how should I put it? Can we write a problem statement? Can we define the problem? And I'm not talking about the individual things. Everybody kind of likes to look at this thing from an individualistic standpoint, and not make any correlations between industries or between disciplines or between ways of thinking and reasoning. But Ian McGrillchrist, in his book, The Matter with Things, as well as his other books, he does look at it from a different perspective. He is saying that this meta-crisis is, in fact, inevitable because of what we have, or the way we conduct ourselves, or the way we think, the way we address ourselves to the issues and the difficulties and the problems and the solutions of the day. We should not be always focused on the problems. We should be looking at the solution space as well as the problem space, but the difficulties of the day. And so we're going to play this. What is it? This is a video clip of Ian McGilchrist. Now, Ian McGilchrist is, like I say, he's the author of The Matter with Things. I would recommend that book for any serious thinker because it does contain a lot of really good information. His insight into why we are experiencing the meta-crisis is pretty refreshing, I would say. And I think he's on to something. My perception is that he is on to something, and others like him, I would say, that they are on to something as well. What is it? It's we are paying attention to the wrong things, basically. Our focus in which we gain attention or we pay attention to certain things is flawed. We should not be paying attention to certain things. What is that? We should not be paying attention to the details all the time. Now, certainly we have to pay attention to the details and the data sometimes, but not all the time. And that's what Ian McGilchrist and others are trying to alert us to. By paying attention to the details and the specifics and the data and the mechanics of things, we are missing not only the big picture, but we are missing an opportunity to discover solutions to the meta-crisis. Okay, so I have outlined for you, to the best of my ability, no doubt it's flawed, but to the best of my ability, I have outlined for you, for the listener, at least a sense of what the meta-crisis is. The meta-crisis is our inability to do things well, to do things right, and to get the job done in the time that we claimed that we were going to get the job done. Right now, it doesn't matter if we are engaged in building big things. We do not know right now when the job is going to be complete. And anybody that says that they do is on the wrong track, basically. We don't know. So how do we get the job done, and how do we get the job done properly and on time? In the world that was occupied by my great audio engineer, there was a term that was used. It's called the Mythical Man Month. You remember that? The Mythical Man Month? Yes, she's shaking her head. Who wrote that? Was that Brooks? Anyway, some great... What is it?
Or was, a friend of ours out of San Diego. Oh.
A friend.
Blanchard?
Was it Blanchard? I don't. Yeah, might have been.
Ken Blanchard.
Ken Blanchard. He's an author of some famous series of books, The One Minute Manager. Yeah. Right. Yeah, okay, so the mythical man month was that you cannot throw more manpower into a project that is failing because that's not the answer. Anyway, so that was I diverged from my central point. My mind is wandering a little bit, but I'll get it back on point here. We're going to play this audio-video clip. It's called The Revolution in Thought. And it features Dr. Ian McGilchrist, and he is going to be discussing things that relate to the metacrisis. He's going to be discussing why we have encountered such a situation now in our modern industrial world. And by knowing why it is occurring, it can help us figure out a solution, and this would be a overarching solution to the metacrisis, which is my point, and this has been my point for like forever, is that let's not piecemeal this thing. Let's look for the big picture or the overarching solution to these problems. I have encountered the situation in my work. I was asked to come into an airline pilot training problem or an airline pilot training problem space, and I was asked to solve this particular problem within this problem space, and then the solution did not exist entirely within the problem space. What am I talking about? The solution to this airline training, and this was an enormously difficult airline pilot training problem, okay? Enormously difficult. We actually had to redesign completely from the ground up how we go about training airline pilots. But the solution did not just reside there. It was not a training system solution entirely. There was a component to the solution that existed outside the schoolhouse. And that was that when I presented that to the industry, I will tell you right now that they were they were not happy with that because they wanted the solution to be contained within the schoolhouse. And I said that, no, the solution is not, it's not going to be contained within the schoolhouse. You're going to have to go into the redesign of the cockpit systems as well. And that was not, I would say, that was not universally appreciated. Let me put it that way. Okay, let's listen to Dr. Ian McGilchrist and his discussion about this metacrisis and why he thinks it is occurring right now in our day and time. Here we go.
Crisis. Please join me in welcoming Ian to the stage. Ian. First of all, I want to thank the Master and Fellows of Darwin College for the honour of asking me to give this lecture. Carved into the stone of the ancient temple of Apollo at Delphi was the injunction to know thyself. Without such knowledge, we are tossed this way and that by forces we neither suspect nor understand. Knowing ourselves helps explain our predicament, and doing so is greatly aided by understanding an aspect of the way in which the brain constructs the world. I believe we've adopted a limited vision of a very particular type, And precisely because it is limited, we cannot see that it is limited. We no longer seem to recognize what it is we do not know, what our way of being in the world is pushing out of our lives and out of our world. To understand what is going on, we need a breadth of view that is increasingly rare. It is the possibility of this that I intend to explore here today. Let me ask you this. Do you think there is a connection between realism, the appreciation of uniqueness, a capacity for understanding melody and harmony, an aptitude for appreciating time, a sense of humor, the ability to read body language, to sustain attention and the fight or flight mode? Or, on the other hand, between a talent for manipulation, a givenness to literalism, to theory at the expense of experience, unreasonable optimism, and a preoccupation with detail, as well as a loss of a sense of the living body, with, in its place, a focus on body parts? Perhaps not. Yet I assure you there is such a connection in either case. It is rooted deep in us, and it is quite coherent once one comes to understand what underlies the pattern. My reason for starting here is to introduce the body of work generated over three decades and published in two long books, The Master and His Emissary, The Divided Brain and the Making of the Western World, in 2009, and The Matter with Things, Our Brains, Our Delusions, and the Unmaking of the World, in 2021. In these books, I examine critically and in depth the matter of hemisphere difference and its important meaning for our lives. As you can see from the deliberately random selection of respectively right and left hemisphere tendencies above, the distinction is not the simple one that many might have heard and which should be unceremoniously buried. It's not at all the case that the left hemisphere is unemotional and dependable, whereas the right hemisphere is flighty and fanciful. If anything, the contrary is the case. But that a question has been wrongly answered doesn't invalidate the question, but rather should, in my opinion, invite further exploration. Consider these facts. The brain, an organ the power of which consists solely in making connections, is massively divided down the middle. Why? Moreover, it is asymmetrical in almost everything that can be measured at many levels in both its structure and function. Why? Not only that, but the band of fibers that connects the hemisphere at their base, the corpus callosum, is getting proportionally smaller, not larger, over evolution, and is, in any case, to a large extent, inhibitory in function. Again, why? Could it be that two aspects of brain function are being kept apart? Unfortunately, I cannot spend time on the evidence here. For one thing, there is a great deal of it, and it requires to be examined at length. It is laid out for that purpose in the two long books I've mentioned. I'm going to go straight to a characterization of some of the core findings, so please forgive me if these are lacking in finesse. To some extent, that is inevitable for present purposes, as I'm sure you will understand. In a nutshell, each hemisphere has evolved for classical Darwinian reasons to pay a different kind of attention to the world. When I saw this, I have to admit that the full import of the distinction did not immediately dawn on me, because I'd been trained in the cognitive science paradigm that saw attention as simply another cognitive function. But the nature of the attention we pay is of critical importance. It creates and molds the only world we can know. Indeed, it is a matter of a disposing of our consciousness towards the world in a particular way. The left hemisphere has evolved to pay narrow beam attention, focused on a detail that we already know and desire, and are intent on grabbing and getting, whether it be something to eat or to use in some other way. In a word, the left hemisphere exists in the service of manipulation. The right hemisphere, meanwhile, is on the lookout for everything else that's going on while we're manipulating, for mates, conspecifics, offspring, and predators, so as not to be eaten while eating. Its attention is broad, sustained, coherent, vigilant, and uncommitted as to what it may find, the exact opposite of that of the left hemisphere. In brief, the right hemisphere is in the service of understanding the contextual whole, which is nothing less than the world. And context changes everything. The difference, then, is not, as used to be supposed, to do with what each hemisphere does, as though it were some sort of a machine, so much as the manner in which it does it, as though it were part of a person. The hemispheric difference in attention is beyond dispute. Indeed, it is universally attested. And since the nature of attention also indisputably changes what it is that comes to our attention, such a difference logically cannot but lead to two different phenomenological worlds. Hence my belief that attention is a moral act. It helps form both us and the world we come to know. So what are these two worlds like? Very briefly, if crudely, these worlds could be characterized like this. In the case of the left hemisphere, the world is simplified in the service of manipulation. It is made of isolated, static things. Things, moreover, that are already known, familiar, predetermined, and fixed. They're fragments that are importantly devoid of context, disembodied and meaningless, abstract, generic, quantifiable, fungible, mechanical, ultimately bloodless and lifeless. This is indeed not so much a world as a representation of a world, which means a world that's actually no longer present, but reconstructed after the fact. And it is literally two-dimensional, schematic, and theoretical. Not, in fact, a world at all, more like a map. Nothing wrong with a map, of course, unless you mistake it for the world. And here, the future is a fantasy that remains under our control. The left hemisphere is unreasonably optimistic and fails to see the dangers that loom. In the case of the right hemisphere, by contrast, there is a world of flowing processes, not isolated things. One where nothing is simply fixed, entirely certain, exhaustively known, or fully predictable, but always changing and ultimately interconnected with everything else. Where context is everything, where what exists are wholes, of which what we call the parts are an artifact of our way of attending, where what really matters is implicit, a world of uniqueness, one where quality is more important than quantity, a world that is essentially animate. Here, the future is a product of realism, not denial. This is a world that is fully present, rich and complex, a world of experience which calls for understanding, not the map at all, but the world that is mapped. The emotional timbre here is more cautious and, in general, more realistic. We need both of these worlds to work together, but also independently, hence the need for connection and separation. Naturally, we are not aware of this because these worlds are combined at a level below our awareness. We become aware only after an accident of nature, such as a stroke, tumor, or injury, or after commissurotomy, the so-called split brain operation, or if one hemisphere at a time is experimentally suppressed. Then they may become suddenly, vividly present to us. Yet because these two worlds have mutually incompatible properties, when we come to reflect self-consciously and to rationalize about what we find, we're forced by the requirement for consistency to choose between the pictures of the world they offer. This is why, as A.N. Whitehead, one of my intellectual heroes, observed, a culture is in its finest flower before it begins to analyze itself. Once our lives become very largely mediated by self-reflexive language and discourse, as in our postmodern world they are, the explicit stands forward and the implicit retires. Yet almost everything that really matters to us, the beauty of nature, poetry, music, art, narrative, drama, myth, ritual, sex, love, the sense of the sacred, must remain implicit if we're not to destroy their nature. The attempt to make the implicit explicit radically alters its nature. We can no longer rely on the wisdom that comes from these all-important but hidden sources, from closeness to the long tradition of a society, to nature and to the sacred, to sophisticate our understanding. In fact, we see these not as irreplaceable guides to truths deeper than those that science can encompass, but as lies. Possibly entertaining lies, but lies nonetheless. We begin to see only the self-created, self-referring world according to the left hemisphere. We go for the machine model, reductive materialism, and the consequences are all around us. Unfortunately, the two hemispheres are not equally veridical. In terms of our ability to apprehend, take hold of and use the world, the left hemisphere is superior. But in terms of the ability to comprehend the world, the right hemisphere is superior. In each of what one might call the portals of understanding, attention, perception, judgment, emotional and social intelligence, cognitive intelligence, that is IQ, and creativity, the right hemisphere is so much superior that the left hemisphere on its own has been repeatedly described as frankly delusional. This is not a rhetorical expression. Denial of the facts and delusional beliefs are far commoner in association with damage to the right hemisphere and consequently dependence on the left hemisphere than the reverse. On its own, the left hemisphere confabulates, makes up stories so to fit with its beliefs. It will frankly insist that a paralyzed limb is unaffected, or if challenged, deny that the offending appendage belongs to the subject at all. Belongs to you, doctor. Unlike the right hemisphere, which sees more than one angle and has for this reason been called by V.S. Ramachandran the devil's advocate, the left hemisphere never doubts that it is right. It is never wrong and never at fault. Someone else is always to blame. Furthermore, in what I take to be the four important onward paths to truth, science, reason, intuition, and imagination, though both hemispheres contribute, the crucial part in each case, including in science and reason, is played by the right hemisphere, not the left. Our predicament is that we now live in a world where the understanding of which is largely limited to that of the inferior left hemisphere. Some signs of this include our inability to see the broader picture, both in space and in time, the way in which wisdom has been lost, understanding reduced to mere knowledge, and knowledge replaced by information. Tokens, representations, the loss of the concepts of skill and judgment, which are the products of experience, the divorce of mind and matter, resulting in a strong tendency to simultaneous abstraction, and the debasement of matter to mere lumpen matter, therefore our exploitation.
Okay, I went on a little longer than I thought. I'm running out of time here, so let me recap. Okay. What is it that we need to understand before we dive into this issue of the meta crisis and try to come up with all kinds of solutions? And I'm sure all of the experts are going to be providing us with solutions. I think the first order of business is to understand how we got here in the first place. What was it that we missed along the way? Now, Ian McGilchrist is talking about that in a very convincing, in my way, in a very convincing way. We have to we have to readjust and reorient the way we think. The whole idea behind this radio show, Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, is to improve our ability to think. Critical thinking, or to be able to think critically, is our hallmark here. And there are key steps. You can go to my book, the Critical Thinking Essentials Handbook, and find out. We need to improve. We need to revise our ability to think and to think critically. The first order of business is we need to audit our mind space. Before we dive into a solution, first of all, we have to recognize that we are facing a meta crisis in this world, in our lives, in this country. The second order of business is let's not just dive into the solution. Let's find out exactly how we got here and what exactly is the problem. Ian McGrillcrest is saying that the problem extends beyond the shop floor, beyond the cockpit, beyond this, beyond that. It goes to the very heart of human consciousness. The problem resides within the sphere of human consciousness, and we need to consider that. There are ways in which we can reorient our consciousness. I would go so far as to say there are ways in which we can improve our ability to think and reason. We can improve human consciousness. We can do that in a very methodical and ordered way. We can do that in a very effective way. And we can look at it in terms of how effective is my power of reason. Is it up to the task? Is my power of reason up to the task of addressing itself to the meta crisis? I guess that's the end of the show. Is that another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast? Enjoyed it. Thank you for being here. We will see you all next week.